Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
It's day one at the Australian Open, and guess who's here? Fresh off a plane, literally about half an hour ago.
Not fresh in any meaningful way, but recently disembarked from a plane.
I find it extraordinary that you're here, that we're actually doing
it. It is completely surreal. I've never felt so surreal doing a podcast. And when I just greeted you in the street, it felt like some sort of apparition from a post-death dream world.
If you haven't followed this story, folks, exactly a week ago, Catherine was taken unwell with a second eye infection.
The same eye infection.
Yes, and she was told she's got to wear two patches, and therefore she couldn't fly on a plane. And hence, her Wednesday flight became her Sunday flight. She got off it after 24 hours on the plane about an hour ago, and she's come straight into Melbourne. It is currently 5 to 1 in the morning.
Catherine, doesn't feel like that.
Catherine got given her apartment's key about 20 minutes ago, yeah, and then met up with us. So we're now sitting in her
Peter,
living room.
Possible new listener.
What was his name?
Peter.
Peter, all right, Pete. And then Catherine's suitcase is sitting to Matt's right here, on its wheels. It hasn't been opened, so priorities. And here we go. How are you feeling?
It's mostly just eye drops and glasses in there.
Right. Okay. It's been raining all day. Did you plan for that?
No.
No.
No. I mean, that's good news for the country, isn't it? It's great.
Yeah, very good news for the country.
Been yearning for rain. There's now flood alerts. Right. Which, if this is a country which can only do extremes of everything.
Oh dear.
Yeah, and yesterday I saw videos of hailstorms the size of cars. Mm. I'm exaggerating slightly.
Massive golf balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They look bigger than golf balls. Anyway.
Damaged
cars. It sounds
cars.
Like I haven't missed anything, basically. No. So, although I was demanding that Matt basically sort of do live text updates of all the tennis while I was on the plane.
Yeah.
Because in the 21st century... you can now have both Wi-Fi and live sport on the plane, which I was very, very excited about. And they promised me live tennis from the start of play at, 11 a.m. local time. Goodness knows what time it was.
Time was redundant.
Yeah. I think they were about to serve a meal that they were calling dinner, but words had lost all meaning. Anyway, they promised me the tennis starting, and I'd said, "Guys, I'm gonna be watching all of it. I'm sat here. I'm ready to put the live tennis on." And then there was some NFL game between the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers that went on for all my life.
Catherine,
I tuned in, and it said 12 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. So I thought, great, easy. I can sit through 12 minutes of American football. I'll see if this is my new bag.
You've not watched much American football,
and
have
like,
you?
Literally an hour later, and about 400 ad breaks later, football was still happening intermittently, very briefly. And I couldn't believe. Don't tell me there's only 12 minutes to go. If there's a full hour of stuttering sport still about to happen.
Right. So
it was very, very frustrating.
Yeah, so this is the NFL podcast.
No, it's bloody not.
No, it's not.
It's just a bunch of blokes standing around bending over.
Hold on, I'm getting...
I'm quite into American football.
I couldn't even... I know my eyes are not my best asset at the moment, but I literally couldn't tell where the ball was most of the time. That's a really fundamental flaw with the viewing experience.
Well, Pete Altman of ESPN has been telling me all about it. I know all the rules now, so I'll pass it on.
The friendly steward was a Green Bay Packers fan and averted his eyes every time he walked past my seat because he didn't want to know the result. He was saving it for when he got home. I was like, all right, I hope you've got a whole evening clear, mate.
Quite right. So how much, Catherine, can contribute to the tennis conversation, which we're about to embark upon? I don't really know. So let's just see how it goes. Before we do that, we just have to say another massive thank you to everybody that has backed us in our Kickstarter campaign for 2020, which is now at an end. I can stop talking about it. Thankfully, nearly 1,500 people contributed to it. Just amazing. And thank you so much for that. We are often running with tennis podcasts in 2020. Not that we exactly stopped, but we're really going to go for it now. And
well, hang on, we weren't already.
Okay, we were.
You've got no other settings.
Stop and fall. That's it. The tennis today, as I said, a lot of rain. To the point where I was told I was just doing the evening session, so come in the afternoon. And I thought, okay, well, this is going quite well. Because
you thought, okay, I'll wake up at 5 a.m. then.
I did do that. The Dan Evans match was not supposed to happen today because of the rain, and he was first on at 11 o'clock local time. And five sets later, he'd finished his match, at which point I decided I would go in. And that's exactly when the rain started, whilst I was walking to work. And yes, I got drenched. Matt,
I can confirm.
Was it dramatic rain?
Incredibly dramatic.
They only do dramatic rain here, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
I
don't do drizzle.
I felt like I'd just jumped in the Yarra.
You look like you had as well.
It was. I mean, you would have enjoyed it. If you'd have not been in it, if you'd have just seen the sight of me when I walked in, it's really awkward when you're the only person in the room who's soaked. You know, when you walk into the press room and everybody else has been in there and they're dry and you're wringing wet. It's really embarrassing.
Did Simon use it as justification to record his vlog in an illegal location?
No,
I did. Well, maybe I shouldn't expose him like this, but I did. I did see a video on his Twitter account today of the rain filmed inside the grounds.
Simon.
I think he was just outside the grounds filming it in, and that's allowed.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I therefore got there, and Dan Evans had fought back from two sets to love down. First time in his career, 0-14 he'd been from two sets to love down previously. Sounds as though he was a little bit tight today, perhaps as we expected, because of being the player expected to win.
Seeded.
Yes. First time
seeded
at a slam.
Yeah, which is massive, really.
Mm. And he could.
It's kind of completely what he's been always working towards, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having a ranking that gets him a seeding at a slam.
It was Mackenzie McDonald he beat, and he'll now face Yoshihito Nishioka.
Mm.
And potentially Djokovic in the third round.
Mm, lots of small guy tennis going on there. Mackenzie McDonald, Dan Evans and Nishioka. Yes. He wasn't great today, Dan Evans, it must be said. And even his comeback, my take on it was actually more McDonald really dropping off in his level. This was only his second match since May, McDonald, because he's had surgery.
Been watching NFL.
He's had surgery and he's in here on a protected ranking.
Right.
And you could see the energy levels just go completely. And as soon as Evans got that third set, he then took control, really. And he did a little nod to Tim Henman's comments about the fact that he needs to skip some meals.
Chippily told him that he could do with missing a few meals.
Yeah, so when he won, he patted his stomach.
I wouldn't take that well from Tim.
No. Actually, similar situation when we were watching Ash Barty tonight. She was the first night session match, and she lost the first set to Lesia Sorenko, who's a former top 30 player from less than a year ago, but then missed 6 months of the year with an elbow problem after Washington and is now down at 120 in the world. And she played really, really well for a set, and then you could just see... I mean, look, Barty started playing better, but you could just see the difference in energy levels by after a set.
Yeah, it was a really error-strewn match, really weird. In fact, it was the whole evening session I was saying to you earlier I thought was really weird, because that Barty's flat first set, I wasn't expecting that. I thought she'd come out really strong, I must say. And then Djokovic played a bit of a weird match. And I looked over on Melbourne Arena and Philipp Kohlschreiber, Marcus Giron was the headline. And that was weird, but it was a sparsely
populated Melbourne Arena.
It was sensible because the winner had to play Tsitsipas, who managed to get his match in today. So they wanted to get that match on court rather than keep it delayed by the rain.
But Tsitsipas was the anti-NFL. He won in about 38 minutes.
And he said, yeah, it was pretty much perfect today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
When he's really good, he does win quickly because he plays quickly. And that was something that really struck me from the match that he played against Nick Kyrgios at the ATP Cup. Just how there was no messing between points. Mm. And sort of without really sort of being consciously aware of it, I was subconsciously aware that... I suddenly became aware that I wasn't reaching for my phone or becoming distracted, or it was holding my attention fully, which... Nadal Djokovic matches, say, even ones I'm engrossed in, my attention will wane in and out just because there's so much wedgie pulling and ball bouncing. I'm very appreciative of how quickly Tsitsipas plays. Wedgie pulling, that's what's been missing from the podcast the last three days, isn't it?
There's a new one.
That's what you've flown me over for.
Tsitsipas, incidentally, I think has to be one of the most impressively focused players on the men's tour. He doesn't really have letdowns in matches.
No, and that segues nicely into what I was about to say with his huge Greek support that he receives here. He spoke today in both positive terms and negative terms about it. The negative being that I think it does slightly distract from his focus, his sort of inner bubble that he's in on the court, because he can make out what they're saying, and I think he thinks it's a bit rude. And
he did say, oh, you do sometimes cross the line, guys, but I love you anyway, which is a bit like, you're my family and I have to love you.
And then in the press conference he said, well, I think it's more the kind of attitude that should stay at a football match. It's not really polite for tennis. And yet then he sort of realised that this could be sort of construed in a really negative way.
So diplomatic crisis.
Yeah. Yeah, so he said, oh no, I do love them. They give me a lot of positive energy, but I do think they are a little bit of a distraction
for him. It's not very him, is it?
No.
That sounds a bit like the crowd. That sounds a bit like when he talks about drinking alcohol and just doesn't...
He sort of accused people of peer pressuring him, didn't he?
Yeah. After winning the ATP finals. They made me drink.
Right, okay. Well, he's through. And he could face, in most of our draws, I would suspect, we've all got him down to face Djokovic in the quarterfinals. And Djokovic won through in four sets today against Jan-Lennard Struff in the last match of the day on Rod Laver Arena. It was a bit weird, that match, wasn't it? There were moments when Djokovic was absolutely sublime. There were purple patches where he came the closest to the sort of Rolls-Royce player that you might see from Federer when he's winning so easily, he just starts showing off and he starts showing you the things he's capable of doing. And there were a couple of points where Djokovic made two or three incredible gets that are just... only he could get to.
He started attempting trick shots.
He did do a through the legs shot, which he really couldn't pull off at all.
It was embarrassing.
It was terrible.
But I love that, though. I love seeing, like, one of the best tennis players ever just not be able to do something
on a
tennis court.
But like then, when he can't hit a smash.
Humanizing. Yeah.
But then when he raced across and chased this volley down and just totally wrong-footed Struff on the full run whilst sliding. And then there was another one where he was in this pinball type rally, and he took one step in and kind of just decided to bend it around and just bring it back inside the sideline. It was just, made you realize really how talented he is, when in a way that he just decided, I'm going to win these points in a slightly different way, just to show you that I can. But then he had a really big letdown in the third set. And Struff's dangerous, and he played quite well, but it was 6-2, wasn't it, that third set?
Yeah, and yeah. He lost serve three times.
And first time he's lost a set in the first round here since 2006.
Really?
And I don't think Struff played that well in the third set. It was just a really strange fit off the gas. Almost looked like a strategic tank.
Oh, I completely think it was. But
is it what you mean, once he lost serve? Yeah.
Yeah, or certainly once he...
There definitely was a point
lost his
at which,
all sorts of rhythm. He thought, right, just lose this set and just refocus for the fourth. And
which
it's amazing how they can just switch on and off like that.
Because the fourth set was 6-1 and he was fine. But it's very easy to read into it, to it, and for me to say, oh, well, there's the example of the ATP Cup thing that I go on about, and I have no evidence for it. I don't know. I mean, that's just a hunch that I have. But I was still surprised.
Yeah, I mean, he's never played six singles matches before the Australian Open before, and this is the first time he loses a set in the first round of the Australian Open. I think it's a fair comparison, a kind of fair thing to think could be related, but whether it was or not, we don't really know.
Day session on Rod Laver Arena was uneventful. They finished so early, they considered putting another match on there, because they started with Naomi Osaka. She won, I think, 6-2, 6-4.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Serena Williams won through. She won the first set 6-love against Anastasia Potapova. Went to break down briefly and then just raced away with it.
Yeah.
And I thought looked really pretty good.
She looks in great shape, I think.
As Courtney Nguyen said on Twitter, the only thing that Serena did badly today was tempering expectations, because she was that strong to begin with. Everyone was like, oh, okay, Serena's in this form.
And she was punchy in the interview room.
First question in the press conference was about Megxit.
Yeah.
I can't believe I've just said Megxit. I hate myself. I'm going to get back on a plane.
Yes, about Meghan Markle.
Get in the bin.
And
Prince
what's
Harry.
His name? Prince Harry. Yeah. And she just said, nice try. I won't be commenting on that.
Was that, just out of interest, was that a British journalist that asked that?
No, it was American. It was an American sole tennis writer, has to be said. It wasn't any kind of tabloidy journalist. It was a writer who I know for a fact is just works the tennis beat. I mean, how do you feel about a question like that? I put it on Twitter. I didn't mean for it to kind of call out the question so much. I was just struck by the fact that the first question at Serena's first press conference in Australia was about, you know, the royal family. And
did she not do pre-tournament press?
No, she didn't. No. Yeah.
How did she manage to evade that?
We're not sure.
Just sort of walking into a room saying, I'm Serena Williams.
Yeah.
You can fight me on this if you want, but it's up to you.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm so used to having been to a few Wimbledon press conferences, you get questions in there about the royals, everyone, because there was some kind of royal correspondent at Wimbledon. I was just a bit taken aback that it was such a big story here. But
it's tricky, isn't it? Because it does feel wrong for that to be the first question, but equally
that
he's thinking,
sets the tone. I need
if
to
I'm
going to
get
there,
this in.
Yeah.
A point that was made to me as well, though, is a lot of the time there's kind of silence at the start of her press conferences because everybody's a bit scared of her and intimidated by her. And I'm not saying everybody, but a lot of people are. A lot of people don't want to start. And and I think that, yeah, I think he's used to it, and he just went in there. That was the question he wanted to ask, so he did it. I think it's a perfectly legitimate question, but yeah, I think if I would probably want to ask one or two other questions first myself. But there we are, you know.
Soften her up.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have made any difference, personally.
No.
But what I was really struck by was how she's not running away from the 24 idea at all. She's totally embracing the idea of, that's what I'm here for, and I want this, and I'm going for it.
I'm going to get carried away now over the course of the next few sentences, but it would be so perfect if she equaled Margaret Court's record in this anniversary year for Margaret Court, where we are currently careering headlong into an awkward situation, aren't we? Where they are going to uncomfortably and in a bit of a fudgy way honour Margaret Court for her tennis achievements and her tennis achievements alone. It would be great if Serena did something to eclipse that and to minimise Margaret Court's place in the history books a little bit. Not minimise, but yeah, to steal some of the attention away from that. It would be perfect.
I felt slightly sad in a way, actually, reading that Serena quote about how she is a little bit obsessed with this 24 number. I don't think Serena's greatness should have any real relation to that 24 number. I know she's made it a goal for herself, but if she doesn't get there, for me, that doesn't take away any of Serena's greatness whatsoever.
Agreed. And when she was chasing 23, 24 wasn't a thing. Nobody was talking about, once you get 23 is just a hurdle on the way to 24. Yeah. It was all about 23.
Steffi Graf's number was the number.
Yeah.
I think that's because we just assumed she would do it.
Mm.
I think it does matter because those that don't know the background will just take the list and look at the list and make an assumption about who's the greatest.
Yeah.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. She's the best player I think that women's tennis has ever seen. But you just want, I just
I know,
wanted
I
to remove that.
I agree
that.
With
but
you
the
there as well.
Lists do tend to be open era lists. They do.
I mean, yeah, but
it's become such a thing though. 24.
Statistics we hear
when we
have
a, when
the asterisk open
you,
era.
How often do you hear the conversation where that's brought up? I don't feel, unless you are
a
tennis insider.
More before she reached 23.
I just feel like.
On pointless when tennis comes up, Richard Osman always says in the open era.
But nobody ever says Margaret Court, then Serena Williams. By the way, Margaret Court, half of her titles aren't really that important. They just say she's trying to get over 24. Mm. And. Is my sense. And so
yeah, the nuance of it is lost.
I think it does matter. It doesn't matter to me, but it matters. So we'll see. She's got 6 more matches to win here over the next 2 weeks, and she might do. What's going on outside? You're in a bit of a dodgy neighbourhood, Catherine.
I don't know where have I lured you to.
I've got to walk home after this. And Matt, and he's only about 18.
Be a brave mugger, David, that comes at you.
Yeah, especially in the mood I'm in.
Dear.
Just, you mentioned Osaka. Something that really struck me today was how different, she said, it feels to be defending the title in Australia compared to defending the title in New York. She was stressed in New York. She was really stressed by it. I think she finds New York as a place quite stressful. It doesn't really fit her personality at all. They're completely diametrically opposed. Whereas Melbourne, she feels much happier, much more comfortable. And she says that she's happier in her role as defending champion. She's not even really thinking about it. And I think in New York, she thought, I have to play my best tennis. You know, I'm the defending champion. I need to put my best tennis out on the court. Whereas here in Melbourne, she's viewing it as I just need to win matches. And that's kind of what she did today. She wasn't always brilliant, but she certainly did just enough. And that's a much more comfortable mental space to be in when you're not aiming for your absolute best all the time. You're just aiming for good enough, and I think that's kind of her approach this tournament.
Yeah, she did look pretty good when she got going. She was pretty nervy at the start. I did think early on whether the 2,000 points thing that she kept referencing in the pre-tournament press conference might become an issue here. And look, other players, I know they're not Naomi Osaka, but I expected a lot of Denis Shapovalov at this tournament and over the next year and he's out.
Did he feature in your predictions?
No, because I thought he would lose to Federer. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah. You thought he would get to... That would have been a fourth round?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched quite a lot of that match today and it felt like a massive and sudden regression to everything he was doing pre-Usney.
Usney was there. Presumably.
Usney was there, yeah. Usney was absolutely there.
So four set loss to... Can I say his name? Because as
you've learned how to say it.
A year or so ago, when I stand by this, Martin Fucsovics was sort of a bit of a thing. I went to lengths to ascertain how to correctly pronounce his name. So there you go, Martin Fucsovics.
He's made himself into a thing again by getting a win over Dennis. But yeah, Dennis's performance and then his post-match press conference performance was a little... Yeah, it did feel like a bit of a regression.
I was pretty eager to hear from you about his post-match press conference because I wanted him to come in and be gutted about that. I think that's a horrible loss, really, and by all accounts, the nature of it, equally horrible.
He was certainly disappointed, but I just think he was focusing on the wrong things. So basically what happened in the match was that he smashed his racket into the court and got a code violation, and he told the umpire on the court, "That's a terrible call. You absolutely can't code me because I didn't break the racket. The rule is I have to break the racket," which when he reads the rules, he's not going to feel too good about that, because that isn't the rule. The rule is violently and aggressively throwing your racket is you can get a code violation. And he just went off on one in the press conference about how he thought it was a horrible call and he thought the umpire was just making calls because he can. And he was really fixated on it. And
did he come into press straight away?
Fairly soon. Not straight away. Within half an hour, maybe.
It was a bit immature, probably. And also he admitted that the quotes, the very strong quotes he gave in his pre-tournament press conference about the air quality issue, he was not really standing by anymore, because he'd not been to the player meeting that everybody had been told the information about the new measures being put in place by Tennis Australia, because he was on a flight over from Auckland, and he had not been told by anybody, were his words, I think, about those changes, and therefore he was sort of speaking about a situation that was about 2 or 3 days old when he'd given those quotes. My sense, just quickly, is I think he's knackered, and I think he. I was talking to Mark Woodford this evening. He was with us from the BBC Radio commentary box, and he reminded that this guy got to the final of the Davis Cup and played all of that. Played the ATP Cup. Played Auckland. Played a lot of other events. He won his first title, didn't he, in Stockholm.
Yeah.
He's made great strides in that period, but I think he's probably a bit burnt out. And again, this is why I just feel that there is some of these fellas are going to be a bit frayed.
But this is, I think I came out of that press conference and I spoke to you about this, David, and I said, if we're looking at the differences or the reasons why the big three have been able to dominate at slams for so long, obviously a major part of it is they're better players, but a significant part as well is they're smarter and they schedule better, and part of that is experience. They understand their bodies and the kind of toll of the tour. But you know, Djokovic, for example, has played the ATP Cup, realised this is taking a physical toll on me, so he's pulled out of Adelaide and he's adjusted his preparation. He's come to Australian Open. Shapovalov has had a not quite as tiring an ATP Cup as Djokovic had, but fairly. I mean, he played a lot of matches there, coming off the back of the Davis Cup as well. And then he's gone to Auckland, played some matches there, and then flown back. And it just seems not very smart, I don't think. And something that really he needs to think about, I think, is his scheduling.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he does as well.
Because was it here last year after Tsitsipas's run here, you looked at the events that he was scheduled to play and you said, that's going to have to change. Like, this isn't the scheduling of somebody eyeing Grand Slam titles. And And he does seem to have adjusted his approach to his scheduling. And look where he is. He's doing it. I know he's not winning Grand Slam titles yet, but he's where Shapovalov wants to be, and Shapovalov is a way off.
Mm.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah. So he's not going to be playing Roger Federer, who was just imperious today. Not a jot of ring rust.
Yeah, he just disproved the theory of rust. I mean, he hasn't played since November, and he comes out and times the ball like that. It is a bit of a joke, actually.
Somebody said on Twitter that the new tell for Federer is if pre-slam he says my expectations are really low, he's going to win the thing. If pre-slam he's saying I'm in the best shape of my life, he's going to lose to John Millman in the fourth round, or, you know, insert name here.
Certainly 3 years ago, it's got a similar feel to it. You know, I think we perhaps expect more of him here than we certainly did then, because he was coming off of surgery. But there is a feeling that, well, he's as fresh as anything.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, it should be said, Steve Johnson is an absolutely perfect match-up for him, because he... with apologies to Steve Johnson, but he has no backhand.
It's a slice backhand,
isn't
it?
It's a slice backhand is all he has.
Keeps it going.
And that just plays right into Federer's hands. He can just do what he wants with it. And if he's ever struggling in the rally, he just goes to Steve Johnson's backhand and he's back to neutral and just tees off again.
He had a bit of 5 o'clock shadow going on, didn't he, Federer? He looked like bad Superman.
Yeah, well, it was about 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was. I just wanted to draw attention as well to his press conference, where he was asked about Jannik Sinner, who is currently 2 sets to love up in his match against M. Purcell, who I don't know.
I think he's Australian, isn't he? That's all I've got on
right.
M. Purcell.
4 games all in the third.
Would that be his first Grand Slam match win?
He's only played one Grand Slam match before, which was the Wawrinka one at the US, which he lost.
Mm. I just really found the quotes here about Sinner. It's classic Federer, just seeing something in a player that certainly I hadn't really thought of it like that. He just thinks deeply about whoever he comes across, it seems to me. Just listen to a little bit of this. He says, "What I like about Sinner is that he's almost got the same speed off the forehand and the backhand, similar to Felix and some other guys. Back in the day, you know, you had players like Steve today, you go to their backhand. You know it's going to come slower, and you go to the forehand, and you know it's going to come back faster."
Bless him, he's talking about Andy Roddick, isn't he? And Fernando Gonzalez.
Yeah.
He says, "With Jannik, I don't feel there is such a thing, which obviously he needs to manage when to pull the trigger and how big you can go, because it's not quite realistic to just keep on whacking the ball full speed. He has great footwork for a big guy, because we forget how tall he is, and then he can play like most of the best movers in the game right now. He can also play open stance and closed stance, which I think is a huge advantage for movement for the future."
Has so he been watching YouTube videos of Jannik Sinner in his spare time?
I think we'll see so much more from him. He's an exciting guy, a super sweet kid, which I always love to see.
Well, what he does do, Federer, is he invites a lot of the young players to train with him, doesn't he? And he sort of, I think it's kind of a power move, really, isn't
totally.
It?
Totally. It's young players and Dan Evans.
Yes.
But he also gets a buzz out of it.
Oh, he does, absolutely.
He is a big kid, is Federer.
There was the video going around, which there's a lot of behind-the-scenes cameras at the Australian Open, and their purpose is to capture content. They're not security cameras. They're there to try and get little bits that you wouldn't see normally behind the scenes. And there was one of Federer playing hide and seek with Severin Luthi and his team, and it was.
I'm not sure anybody else knew they were playing hide and seek, though.
No,
he was just playing his own game of hide and seek.
Yeah,
yes, they looked long suffering.
I'm a bit conflicted on the Big Brother style cameras they have here, but then I see something like that, and I'm like, I feel compromised in my views. But that was the biggest glimpse I've had of the Roger Federer that you describe, knowing David, you described in the Roger Federer special that we did, and you described knowing back in the day when he was a youngster and into wrestling and playing lab music in his car and stuff. Yeah. That was a real window on that Roger Federer.
Oh, he's playful. He's a pain in the arse sometimes, I have to say. I mean, he used to be anyway. I love him. I think I like all that sort of thing, but I mean, you know, you have to watch your back because he's going to try and get you, is my recollection. And he loves it. So, any other results of note? I'll tell you what, we haven't talked about Coco Gauff, have we?
We haven't, no. Coco Gauff beat Venus Williams for the second time. And I think the biggest takeaway is how at Wimbledon it felt like a shock, whereas here it didn't really. Part of that was because Venus hasn't played and came in. And to be honest, the first two games, I thought this could be over in about 45 minutes. Venus couldn't find the court. But then it turned into a really good match, particularly the first set. And there is so much to admire about Venus Williams. I mean, we talk so much about how Federer and Serena are still going at their age. You know, Venus is even older, and she's not got the obvious reason to keep going that both Serena and Federer have, and yet she's still out there. And some of the tennis she played was really uplifting to watch, that she can still hit the ball so sweetly when she wants to. And
you went out there for that one.
I did, yeah. And her whole body language is kind of fascinating, because she's so subdued. I mean, she really is not energetic on the court at all, and yet occasionally she just explodes in these rallies still. But Gauff, it was my first time watching Gauff live as well, and she was hitting second serves above 100 miles an hour throughout the whole match, as though it was just normal, which is pretty unbelievable. And the other thing you notice about her, or I did certainly, is how precise her footwork is. I mean, she's a great mover, but she makes the little adjustments. If the ball hits the net, the net cord and comes to her, she moves almost just on instinct. She knows where to go, and she was able to take away Venus's time by doing that. And yeah, this might sound like a weird thing to say, but she's actually better than I thought she was, Gauff, yeah. In a way. I think that there's been a lot of talk about how Gauff is absolutely completely amazing, but having watched her, I've never been like completely blown away, but I kind of was today.
When someone's that hyped,
right,
it's almost impossible for them to live up to
their expectations.
Are you sort of expecting to be underwhelmed when you actually see the real thing?
I watched,
she's not.
Towards the end of the first set, when she'd had three set points, and they all came and went, and she was serving for the set, and then it ends up in a tie break, and she was rattled by that briefly, and yet she still held it together.
Yeah.
I find her a marvel, really.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the blip. I'm waiting. I don't want to see it, but I'm sort of, human nature tells me that this isn't normal. That she's 15, that she has a breakout win at Wimbledon, that she follows it up at the US Open, that she wins a title in Linz, I mean, indoors in Austria, and then comes out straight away at the start, and we haven't seen anything. We haven't seen any kind of moment of a wobble.
It's her first direct entry into the main draw of a slam.
She just looks born for it.
Mm.
I hope that continues.
Yeah, and I should say, just as I think what I've said, as struck as I was by Goff, I also was by Venus, even in defeat. And it was two marvels out there. You know, tennis is such a physical sport, and I don't think there's another sport as physical as tennis where you could have a 15-year-old being able to do what she was doing out there and a 39-year-old, and they were playing at such a high level against each other on the biggest stage. And it's really special, those kind of moments. Yeah.
Any other results today of note?
One other notable outfit.
Oh, Grigor.
Grigor.
What was he wearing? I mean, his warm-up one was the one that stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah.
Is that what he wants?
Yes. Stop people in their tracks.
Yeah.
Well, so I went to his press conference.
Or does he think that looks good?
Everything. He thinks it looks good, and he can kind of pull it off.
Sure.
And he's also heavily involved in the design process of it all.
Oh,
and
keep that quiet if I were you, Grigor.
No,
it was not like an all-black onesie with yellow blobs all over it.
Mm.
Like, it looked like a sort of, I don't even
know. Like a novelty ski suit.
And he had a massive smile on his face. He was loving it.
Yeah. So I went to the press conference. Well, actually, he was down for interview room 5, which is not particularly big, interview room 5. So I was waiting there. He was a bit late. And then suddenly, Grigor Dimitrov is on his way to interview room 5. And suddenly, there were loads of people. So we had to move into one of the bigger interview rooms. And obviously, everyone else had the same idea that I had, to try and ask him about his outfit. And Eleanor Crooks got in there first and said, Grigor, what do you actually think about what you were wearing? And he turned the question back on her and said, well, what do you think?
Oh, nightmare.
Yeah. And
oh, no.
And Eleanor said,
worst possible scenario.
Eleanor said, well,
what would you have said, Matt, thinking on your feet?
I think I'd have said what Eleanor said. Not my taste.
Bold.
Which,
and then he said, I designed it.
Which Grigor took really well. He said, I appreciate your honesty.
I think I'd have said, I'm not sure I'm qualified.
I think I said, not my taste, but you can pull it off, kind of thing. But then he went into this big long spiel about how, yes, he likes colours. He's heavily involved in the process. He wants to make a bit of a fashion statement, and he has some fun with it. And I must say, the spark was back with Dimitrov.
Did anybody ask him about the interview that he did with, I think maybe, no, it wouldn't have been Bulgarian TV because he would have been speaking Bulgarian. I saw it on social media. I'm not sure what TV outlet it was. It was here a couple of days ago. He was asked, what have you learned most over the last year, over the ups and downs of the last year? And he said, how did he put it, Matt?
He said that he has learned not to expect too much of others.
Which is the most tragic answer imaginable. That really, I really felt sad hearing him say that. I mean,
he's clearly been let down
by a lot of people. Yeah. Mm. It's,
doesn't know who he can trust anymore.
Yeah, no. I think there's a lot of people in his life.
There's a few close people to him that he's confident in, but I think he's
that are telling him he looks good.
He reminds me a little bit. It reminds me a little bit of people like Mark Philippoussis,
yeah,
who are really, really. They're both really nice people, Mark and Grigor, and you get
trust
the feeling
people.
That they don't know who's a good and who's not. And so they're just nice with everybody, and they can get taken advantage of.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it wasn't the press conference for that.
No.
Right.
It was very
It took a fashion-heavy direction early on,
if
yeah.
If he's got a smile on his face, that's good.
Oh, absolutely. As I said, the spark, there's something.
So it's on.
I mean, no, but I'm pleased that he seems
back on.
To be...
What's
again.
It?
The Grigor vision.
I mean, he beat Federer at the last slam.
Yeah.
So and he's in his section again. So
yep,
that would be interesting to see.
Rightio. Tomorrow.
Oh, 96 matches. Can't cope.
Hang on, we haven't mentioned Kuzmova.
Oh.
Was almost the first loser of Grand Slam Tennis 2020.
Yeah, the race was on. Who's going to lose first, Kuzmova or Larsson? Kuzmova didn't even get that crown.
Oh, bless her.
Yes. All I have to say is sometimes mistakes are made.
Well, at least you picked your Stremska as well.
Yeah.
If you pick everybody,
someone will make it.
Someone
right?
will pop yeah. up. And
although,
as I said back in,
well, it came to my attention this morning that on ESPN they'd done a big tournament preview, and it was, and the section was "Woman to sneak through unnoticed." Victoria Kuzmova.
Right. So it's not you.
So please direct all future mocking and hate to ESPN.
Okay, tomorrow, a cracking match to start off with on paper. If Kristina Mladenovic is fit, she's playing Karolina Pliskova in the first match on Rod Laver Arena. Then Donna Vekic against Maria Sharapova. I mean, that's a couple of corkers on paper, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those where I think the day session on Rod Laver is actually much better than the night
then
session.
Then it's Nadal against somebody I have to say I've never heard of.
Who Matt and I saw in Paris on the Simon Mathieu court playing Tsitsipas.
It was great.
And it was great fun. He is great fun. I mean, he's obviously going to lose, but he's great fun.
I remember watching that match and thinking, I want to see more of Delien.
Hugo Delien of Bolivia.
Yeah.
That's who it is.
Who says that back in Bolivia, they're treating that match like the World Cup final.
Oh, that's so cool. That's very cool. So we've got Medvedev against Tiafoe in the evening session, and then Angelique Kerber against...
You shouldn't be putting a women's match on after Medvedev-Tiafoe.
No.
Angelique Kerber against Italian qualifier Elisabetta Chocchiarito. Okay, I've said that well. And then on...
You could do shout-outs after this, David, so don't go too big too early with your
pronunciations. Fortunately, one of them's called Chip. So we're all right. Alexander Zverev and Simona Halep are both playing on...
Zverev's got Cecchinato. I know Cecchinato hasn't been a thing for a couple of years,
and
but...
And never on anything other than a clay court.
No, but... You could definitely see him losing a couple of unnecessary sets there.
Mm.
Oh,
but
yeah.
there's just loads and loads of matches. There's Kyrgios, obviously, on the Melbourne Arena, last on.
There's one court that's got seven matches on.
Cool.
Now, if the Davis Cup told us anything, it's that six is too many.
So this time tomorrow, we will not be recording because the sixth match.
I was just thinking, it's kind of late. It's 20 to 2 now, but actually the last tournament I was at, they were starting matches at this time. So really, this is early.
What am I complaining about?
The tennis is nuts.
Okay, so joining Chip in terms of shout-outs for the day.
Does Chip have a surname?
So No. We don't have a surname.
Chip.
So thank you, Chip,
like
for
Prince.
Back in the tennis
Madonna.
Podcast. Thank you, Sean Fitzpatrick, and thank you, Andrew Greenoff. The tennis podcast at the £100 level, and we are hugely appreciative, as we are to all of the 1,500 people who pitched in. Our mascots, we're very appreciative to them always. I mean, I think Catherine and Franklin just, you know, have it for free. just send us pictures.
People have given us money to send us pictures of animals.
Yes,
it's extraordinary.
Crumble the dog is
Crumble
our.
Is- Draining. I mean, they're all just so great.
Let's not do this again, Catherine. Okay. It lasted 4 minutes last time. Australian Open mascot, Crumble. Butler is our year-long mascot, so hello, Butler.
And we had a lovely picture of Butler today watching Naomi Osaka.
Yeah. So make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and then you'll get to see all these sort of things. Links in the show notes to this show. Our Reddit community is growing, burgeoning.
Up to 300.
Really? Oh, dear. If he gets to 500, I have to do one of those ask me anything things. Yeah.
I was asked if it was really me. There was some speculation that I might have been a fake Catherine Whittaker.
Right, okay. Are you?
There might be other fake Catherine Whittakers, but I can confirm that I am the one and only.
Right. Newsletter. Get on the newsletter. We've got to go and put that together now, Matt. So the day's not over yet.
It's only starting.
This is the first of 15 daily editions of the Tennis Podcast here in Melbourne. Catherine, it's lovely to have you with us.
It's lovely to be here.
Delighted you made it.
It's made us really happy that you're here, finally.
No, it's really nice. It's really nice. And we'll be back with more tomorrow. So sleep up, watch your tennis, and we'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.